This is Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. Today's episode is a part two of an interview with our curriculum coach, Arielle Kennedy, as she continues to discuss the different models that we help instruct our teachers on in building their curriculum. And so now we rejoin the podcast with Arielle Kennedy and your host, Kendall Terry.
But then the bulk of that we've really spent on, well, we have these standards, we have this big idea. Well, how are we going to actually teach this, right? Mm-hmm. And teaching this does not mean standing in front of our students and lecturing or doing a worksheet, right? And so then we spend individual sessions on, I would say, like the five areas of curriculum design. How is this actually going to be done in our classroom? And so we spent time on inquiries, right? Inquiries, questions, project-based learning, problem-based learning. There is a difference. And so we're talking about the differences with our staff. And we're talking about how inquiries are different than project-based learning. And so we're really delving into that educational definition and vocabulary and philosophy and kind of having those discussions of where those standards fit in.
And I think the one of the things that's come from those discussions with our staff, I know it happened with me earlier on too, of you realize that there are terms that we use in education, and sometimes we just assume everybody understands that word the same way that we understand that word. And it's not that either individual is wrong in their interpretation of that word. The word inquiry, for one,
that's a big one.
It's a big one because, you know, as a science teacher, whenever we're doing an inquiry in science, I mean, we're doing, in essence, that comes back to a lot of times a lab. It comes back to some bigger thing that we're going out and seeing in nature and coming up with questions and testing ideas and, you know, coming up with hypotheses, all of that. I mean, those are kind of, that's what inquiry meant, like it's bigger understanding. And then I was in a meeting where I was talking to some of the lower school teachers and they were like, no, that's not what inquiry is for us. You know, inquiry for them was, it was a lot of just stuff that they're doing in their classroom with their kids, and it's very small scale. But that's an inquiry that they're working on, where they're exploring numbers or they're exploring this concept or idea with math or with science or with English. And I was like, oh, so when we're saying inquiry, for some of our teachers, they're thinking this big project in essence, this bigger thing that's going to take a lot of days, a lot of time in my class. And for other teachers sitting in the room, that word inquiry is like this one, in essence, hands-on activity that I did with kids. That was an inquiry. They explored and they got a result and we moved on. And so having these conversations with the whole staff from pre-K through 12th grade helps to solidify some of these words, and understanding that it's okay that it's different for an elementary understanding and a middle school understanding and a high school understanding. As the kid changes, that word's going to kind of evolve and change and be different as well, and that's okay. But if we know that, then when we have that conversation, we know where everybody's coming from, as opposed to having this conversation and assuming everybody's on the same page. We're not. And so we take time to kind of explore that. And I know you guys even had like this Venn diagram on the board with all these words of that go into that, you know, and how are project-based learning and problem-based learning similar and different? How does that include inquiry? How does that include hands-on curriculum? How does that include?
And they all have a part in our curriculum.
And it's all there. And, and it kind of all does fit under this heading that we give as just inquiries. And so it's okay that there's all these components. We need to recognize these components, and they all have value in education. They all should be included in our curriculum. We're going to see them and identify them and move on with the discussion for, with our teachers.
And you hit on a big thing there. It's come up a couple times. It's the idea of, we do our professional development pre-K through 12 because we are a pre-K through 12 school. We want our teachers to know that. We want our students to know that. And the big thing with our teachers is the reason why we all sit in a room together is because of those discrepancies. I still remember my first year here sitting in a PD session from a veteran lower school teacher who had taught at Fort Craig and had been in this system for so long, and he was talking about inquiries, and I'm sitting here thinking, I am not doing inquiries. I am failing my students. And then I went back to my, Jen Bruce was my mentor at the time, and she goes, Arielle, this is what inquiries mean at the high school level. I'm like, oh, I'm doing those. We're good. Yeah. I'm not worried anymore.
We're fine.
Right? Because it does. It changes. And we want our teachers, we don't want our teachers to do exactly what I did 9 years ago.
Right.
Like, have a freak out that I'm not doing this in my classroom and I have to change everything that I'm doing to make sure that I meet my students' needs. But that's why we have these discussions pre-K through 12.
Yeah.
So that our first grade teachers know what is happening in our eighth grade classroom. And our eighth grade classroom knows how to prepare the students for that 12th grade English assignment.
Absolutely.
And so And so we spend this time on inquiries. Another session that we spend time on are field studies and being there experiences. Mm-hmm. The crucial real world connection. The goal is to, I'm trying to remember what Linder Jordan says, awaken and inspire. That's not right.
I don't know that she uses inspire.
It's another word in there.
Of the other word that she always comes
Linda,
back to.
Email us and let us know.
That's right.
Awaken and enhance.
Enhance.
Awaken okay. and enhance. And you're trying to awaken and enhance those 20 senses, right?
Right.
There's some great diagrams that show, like, if you're looking at it in a book, awesome. There's these three senses. If you're watching a video, okay, great. We finally hit seven senses. If we have a guest speaker come in, maybe it's about 13 senses, but actually being there is going to awaken and enhance all 20 of those senses.
Right.
And so discussing why that is so important, but also helping our teachers find those places to go. Yeah. Not all of our teachers are from this area. And then it's the misconception that not all of our students, Kate's Cove is in our backyard. Doesn't mean all of our students have ever been to Kate's Cove.
Right.
Sometimes teachers just assume, oh, they've gone to Kate's Cove and they've seen a black bear. Not all of our students have been able to do that. So take the students there. If you are studying animals of the Smoky Mountains, then let's go to Kate's Cove and let's experience that. Or let's have a park ranger come in and speak to our students about what it's like to experience that or why it's so important.
Yep.
So it's being there experiences, as well as guest speakers on campus as well. We have so many amazing resources here. And so discussing why it's important, that real world connection, but also helping our teachers see some of those other options out there as well. I mean, and giving our teachers time to collaborate, right? We have students who are pre-K through 12. Our graduating class started in first grade, I believe.
This year's graduating class would have been first grade.
Right. And so if they're going to Kate's Cove in first grade, let's go somewhere different in second grade, right?
Yeah.
And so letting our teachers have that experience and that time to discuss that vertical alignment from grade to grade as well.
Well, and I think it's also looking at those natural times that you go back then, too, of saying, yes, we don't want to just go to the same exact place and do the same exact thing every time. But can we go back to the same exact place
and have a different experience.
Go a little different on the experience or go a little bit deeper than what maybe we could do in first grade? Well, now we've got a third grader up there that we can go a little bit deeper into this idea or this concept. Or they're at that time period now where they're starting to see the living arrangements that somebody would have had in the 1800s. Well, that's great. They have a lot of those cabins and stuff still there, and you can walk around, and there's information that you can get from the historical component of what happened in the early development process, and that's going to connect to the history now at a maybe a fifth grade level. So it's okay to go back to those when it's appropriate. We need to identify, and because also if you know that, hey, you guys did this in first grade, you did it again in third grade, we're going back in fifth grade, so let's talk about what did you remember from when you went in first grade? Who did you talk to? What did you see? Because you're helping reawaken those ideas. And, you know, we talk about that with the 20 senses of we want to give experiences where they really have that meaning and that value. You know, there are times that you'll get that smell of something that comes through and it takes you back to that memory of your childhood, or it puts you right back at the campfire, maybe when you were growing up and camping and, you know, or whatever it is. And so memory is connected so much to those senses. And so we want kids to, if at all possible, get there, be in the environment. That's why we call it being there. It's not a field trip. It's not a celebration for us. It's not something that you earn if you read so many books or whatever. This is part of learning. It's a crucial part of learning. And so we want kids to be in that environment. I remember I took a group to the zoo, but I contacted the zoo and said, I'm not bringing a group over here to just get a ticket to the zoo. We can do that. That's great. But what I really want them to see is the process you guys go about in how you feed the animals here at the zoo. The zoo loved having that conversation with us, and they were like, hey, this is great, and here are some things that are going on, and it ended up being that we were able to do a social service project while we were there, or a civil service project, because they had gotten a shipment of stuff from like a local grocery store that was, you know, that they partner with that goes bad, and so if they don't get rid of it, and so they there's a point that they give it to the zoo that they can mix it into food for the animals, and so that it doesn't just go bad and end up in a dumpster. And we happened to be there when a delivery was going to come in, and so our kids then got to help sort and awesome. And all that. But they were able to actually get this behind the scenes view of the zoo. Now mm-hmm. we still actually spent some time out, and the zoo helped us, you know, get through and see some different things too. But they got to talk to the nutritionists, they got to talk to the veterinarians, they got to talk to the people that the zoo employs in putting their foods together and why they do what they do. Now there was that element of they couldn't actually take it to the animal, you know, but they did. They got to do a whole lot. And then the zoo actually gave us some, while we were there, identified some areas we needed to go so that we could actually see some of the animals being fed mm-hmm. Because they have certain timetables that they can do that. That experience is not just going to the zoo. Now, they had gone to the zoo, like our pre-K. One of our pre-K field studies is going to the zoo.
And so, their goal in pre-K is just to experience just some of those animals.
Right.
Right? But then in third grade, they go back to the zoo, and they have to delve into a specific habitat for a specific right. animal. And so that's that idea of that progression.
Absolutely.
That being a pre-K through 12 school, those teachers get to have those conversations and then work through that.
And so that's an opportunity. It's an awesome opportunity for our students that really brings that real world to life. Okay. Even though it's in a zoo where you're seeing animals that aren't in this area, it's still seeing that bigger picture of the world. Mm-hmm. And so that when we're talking to our teachers about being there, we're not saying go take the tourist view, go take the, you know, typical class field trip. It's go see what you're learning in the real world and help that learning come alive. I think being there is a huge component mm-hmm. to that brain awakening because of all of those senses that you start mm-hmm. tripping and they start smelling. I mean, until you go to a fishery and you get that full-on smell of what a fishery is and like, you can watch a video all day long and you don't have a clue what that is like. Mm-hmm. It's that power of being at the fishery and then seeing those tanks from the very smallest of the tanks to their largest tanks and how they're putting that together. I remember doing that with one of my kids as they were in elementary school and going as a parent as well, just to experience that with the kids. I was just another chaperone in the room type deal. But it was an awesome experience because you get the smell, you mm-hmm. get the heat of one room because they're trying to work on temperature for the fish, and then how they end up in the outside tanks, and you're seeing that whole process, how they're feeding them, how they're going about getting them from egg all the way up to when they're being released out into the, you know, streams and stuff of our local waterways. That is, you can watch a video and learn details, mm-hmm. but when you're there and seeing it and all of those senses are coming alive, you start to have that real memory formation taking place. And so that's a huge component that we love doing with our teachers. Mm-hmm. And so that's, we've got being there in inquiries, and I think you guys have done at least one more of those components as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, absolutely. So there were actually three others, and I know we're probably running slow on time. One of those is also immersion areas. And so if our being there experiences awaken all 20 senses, our immersion areas actually awaken 13 of those 20 senses. And so it's being in an area immersed or as close as possible. And so our yep. teachers will design immersion areas in their classroom so the students can be a part of something they have seen or are currently working on. And so that could have hands-on real things, or it could have like 3D replicas of that. And so yep. we sent our teachers on a scavenger hunt around the school. So we sent our upper school teachers to the lower school and our lower school teachers to the upper school and said, well, what do these classrooms look like yeah. on other parts of the campus? What do their immersion areas look like? To bring ideas back to their own classroom, but to also know what students are doing in other grades.
Yep.
So a huge part of that curriculum. And then the last two would be our novel studies. And so whether it's pre-K through 12, our students and our teachers, they're reading novels, they're reading real world connections. And so as part of that, our staff is actually doing a book study this yeah. year. And so that's part of, that's more of an individual growth side. They picked a book that they were interested in and were put up into groups. And so they meet four times throughout the year, once a quarter, to discuss what they're learning from those books. And so it's anything from, we have some middle school teachers who are currently reading like Brain Rules or Brainstorm, which is how the middle school brain is currently changing,
yeah.
or The Whole Brain Child is one that I'm currently reading right now, so yep. much more geared to our lower school teachers. And so then being able to sit down and discuss with teachers of like interest, reading the same type of text and having those discussions about them.
And even when we're looking at novel studies, I know we had added and modified it based on teacher feedback of it's not always even a novel study. Sometimes it's a text analysis. You know, I was setting in a middle school science class the other day, and she had on the board an article that had been written that was talking about the things that they were studying right now in the class. And she was having kids read it, discuss it. Well, that in essence is part of that text analysis, that novel study of this is, once again, it's more than just me saying this is important in the world. Here's another connection for you. Mm-hmm. And I even love that she was leading to another assignment that used that text, and she reminded the kids in the program that they were using that they could go in and put their Lexile level in, yeah, and it would modify that reading because it was given at one level, mm-hmm, for everybody to read, which is great. But now that you need to use it and go deeper in it, let's go to the Lexile level that matches up with where you're at so that you can understand it even deeper. Mm-hmm. And so she had a Lexile, you know, they could go in, they could put their Lexile level in. It modified the entire writing, mm-hmm, on the article so that the kid could understand it even at a deeper level of their reading abilities. And so it was just an awesome addition to that. But that's still part of that. It's that novel, mm-hmm, study idea that a lot of times you kind of think of like the English classroom doing some kind of reading together, but it goes more than just, mm-hmm, us picking a novel. Sometimes it's us picking the text that we're going to analyze that continues to make those connections to, yeah, the broader sense of what we're talking about.
And then adding on, I think I probably saw a similar lesson in that a teacher then was talking about how is this a good source or a bad source? Or how do you know that this is a reputable professional source, yeah, as some of these students are working on things like their NHD projects or their Explorevision projects? Yeah. And so being able to pick out novels or pick out texts that are peer reviewed. And that's so awesome. Having that discussion about it as well. And when we say novel, I know the 6th and 7th grade crew, they're doing a graphic novel for Romeo and Juliet, yeah, or Midsummer's Night's Dream. That's and so fun. And having that connection too. But it's just the idea of those real world connections to those projects and those inquiries that they're doing in class as well.
Absolutely.
Which is why we wanted our teachers to experience that as well. And then that last component is the component that I think a lot of our parents think about when it comes to curriculum, is it's the idea of assessments, right? Yeah. Whether it's formative assessments, it's summative assessments, whether it's an inquiry or a project. And so going over all of the different ways you can assess students and students can show mastery, whether it's through a speech or a paper, a presentation. And then, but the biggest part of that is the idea of rubrics. Mm. And so if we are going to assess our students, we have to have clear procedures and a clear way to assess that.
Yeah.
And that comes with those rubrics. Student, yes.
Going into that too. There are several observations that I did this 9 weeks that I saw, mm-hmm, some amazing projects being either presented or discussed by our, mm-hmm, teachers. And the one question that I always had, not because I was checking on them or not because I was trying to like catch a teacher not doing something, but I ask over and over and over again of like, can you share with me the rubric that you're using to, mm-hmm, to assess this? The reason why I was asking that is because I wanted to see how they were going to grade this, because sometimes you get caught up in a project. I've done this as a teacher as well. You get caught up in this thing that you're creating for your students and this project and this assessment, and then you get to this final piece, and if you didn't have a good, clear rubric in place, sometimes that project really kind of, it developed a life of its own and maybe hit some of the things you wanted, but maybe didn't hit everything you wanted then.
Yes.
And over, I got back these amazing rubrics that our teachers have created that they're using from the lower school side all, mm-hmm, the way up through the upper school side of just, oh, okay, here's the rubric. And I mean, it was never a question with these teachers of like, you know, oh, I haven't created it yet. It was, here's what we're using.
It's just so great to
see them. And to look at, oh man, this is what they're asking a kid to show in, mm-hmm, their learning. And you can see the depth of how the project was designed. Mm-hmm. You can see how they're asking kids not only on those rubrics for content, but they're also asking them for life skills and lifelong guidelines. Mm-hmm. They're asking them for the creativity component, a sense of humor component, you know, how they're organized, how their presentation was organized, and they're looking at an organization component. But it's showing those in the rubrics too. Like, we're assessing you not on, mm-hmm, content only, but also on all of these other soft skills, these lifelong guidelines, life skills that are so important to our model.
And I think that was, and I've had the exact same feedback. And have had tons of rubrics sent to me. And it's a lot of times these teachers will have what they would call a standards rubric for like the content, and then they have their SEL or their social emotional rubric for, yeah, the actual presentation component.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of shows that unique ability we have here at CBA is absolutely, we want these students to know all about the American Revolutionary War, but we also want them to be good presenters as well. We want them to be able to organize their content. We want them to create a Google Slides or some sort of a poster or a video, and they're not just reading from their cue cards or reading from the slides the whole time. And so that's a huge component about it. Absence of threat is one of our body being compatible elements, application of mastery. And so it's just talking through with our teachers about, because I mean, there are different types of rubrics. There are rubrics that are really, really helpful. And then there are rubrics that just don't mesh with our brain-based model here at CBA. Yeah. And so going through all those different types, helping teachers develop a rubric. Every time, I led a very similar session probably 3 or 4 years ago, because we're cyclical. We want to remind our teachers and help with our curriculum. And every time with this session, it's always like, oh, I'm using this holistic rubric, but this analytical rubric or this single point rubric, like this is what I really need to do if it's going to be standards-based grading and not just a, oh, here's your three.
Yep. And that's, it's just part of that deeper discussion that we continue to have with staff of showing them, like, there are appropriate times to use this type of rubric. Mm-hmm. A holistic rubric may fit really well with this project, but we don't ask you to do a holistic rubric on every project. Sometimes it's a single point rubric. Sometimes it's an analytical rubric. And so helping our teachers understand there's different ways to assess students based on what you're doing, based on what the project is designed about, based on the information you're trying to get out of it. And so use different things. Don't feel like you have to
fill. Doesn't have to be a quiz.
Right. Don't feel like you have to fit in this one box where you have to give the quiz on Friday or you have to give the unit test this way, you know, this many multiple choice, this many short answers. It can be that at times, and it is.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say, as a previous math teacher, not giving a quiz hurts my heart. Like, I feel like you have to, but it's taken me a few years to realize, like, no, I can assess math standards in many different ways other than giving them an assessment that I then have to go sit down at home and grade with a cup of coffee.
Right. Well, and you can have them come in and play a game that day, and you're seeing them use all of the things that you're needing them to use, and how well do they do it. And the kids are playing a game while doing it, and they're having fun. They're getting to, you know, interact with others. Mm-hmm. And that collaboration component, a lot of times we only, you know, it seems like we only ever assess them on this individual. What do you as an individual know? And once again, I go back to this real world scenario. How often in life is it just you?
Individual presentation or project.
And how often in life is it a team that we're working together, and we've got to learn how to collaborate, and both of our ideas in that final piece is what's going to make that thing that much better. And I know I can go to you for this information, and you can come to me for this information, and we can work together to get where we want to be. That is so incredible. And I love that our teachers are doing that. We will continue this discussion. The model, when we get into the model, we can go on for a while just because there's so much there, but it's so much
about. There's so many things I want to say, but there's a time constraint.
Right. Where we want to go and what we want to do. So thank you for sitting down and having this discussion, and what you do for our staff in professional development, what you do for our staff in curriculum design, and how you help them from being a new teacher to being a veteran. You do an awesome job. So thank you.
Thanks, Kendall.
This has been the Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. If you'd like to find out more about our school, you can visit us on our webpage, www.claytonbradleyacademy.org, or find us on social media sites at CBA STEM or at Clayton Bradley Academy. We hope you have a wonderful day.